Good evening. Thank you for joining us. The rumors about R. Kelly and sexual abuse went back decades, but nothing stuck until today. When a jury took about 9 hours to render its verdict on all counts, the decision could land the star in prison for life. Here's ABC's Stephanie Ramos.
The jury delivered a powerful message to men like R. Kelly.
R&B superstar R. Kelly found guilty in federal court in Brooklyn today.
No matter how long it takes, the long arm will catch up with you.
The singer was convicted of 9 counts of racketeering and sex trafficking charges, including the trafficking of 6 females, 3 of them in their teens. One of them, the late singer Aaliyah, who died in a plane crash in 2001. Kelly married her when she was 15 years old.
Today's verdict brings an end to Robert Kelly's decade-long reign of terror over many vulnerable girls, boys, and young women.
The jury of 7 men and 5 women deliberating for just 9 hours before reaching a verdict. The 54-year-old reportedly motionless as the verdict was read.
I believe I can fly. I believe I can touch the sky.
The I Believe I Can Fly singer's wings may be clipped forever now. He could end up serving life in prison.
You represented some of the victims and some key witnesses. What does this verdict mean for them?
Now, he's simply a convicted felon. And that is what is going to be in his obituary. And he has only himself to blame for what he did. He underestimated the courage of his victims.
The prosecution arguing his abuse was an open secret, using his network of influence in what amounted to a criminal enterprise.
Today is monumental for our country, for our communities, to know that we are heard, we are seen, and defendants will be held accountable for their criminal actions.
During the nearly 6-week-long trial, the prosecution called 45 witnesses. More than half a dozen of them said they were abused by Kelly. At least 3 of them were underage at the time.
The prosecution was able to prove and show this jury that for numerous years, for decades, R. Kelly was engaging in the same pattern of having sexual relations with young girls, the same patterns since 1994.
Witness after witness described an abusive pattern of terrifying control, claiming R. Kelly dictated everything from their ability to use the bathroom to when they could eat, even forcing them into sex acts.
You've called R. Kelly the worst perpetrator that you've pursued. Why is that?
He recruited fans of his, targeted them, intimidated them, indoctrinated them, threatened them, sexually assaulted them. He failed to disclose that he had genital herpes. He knew that he had it. He didn't use a condom. As a result, a number of the victims contracted genital herpes, a sexually transmitted disease that they will have for the rest of their life.
Angela was a Jane Doe in the case, testifying in the trial about her own alleged abuse at the hands of Kelly as a teenager.
I was a little girl who was in a big girl's world. For 30 years, we were overlooked. For 30 years, people said we were lying. For 30 years, people said this didn't occur. I never fathomed that I would have to relive this. So I don't know what healing is gonna be like, but I am so ready for it to start.
Angela met R. Kelly when she was around 15. She was a background dancer and aspiring singer.
The situation started with us. You know, being the first set of young girls that were exposed to and violated by this gentleman. It was important for me to gain my courage and to have a voice in this and to take my power back and to give the young ladies who couldn't speak and were not given the opportunity to speak a voice.
Her testimony was particularly damning, also accusing Kelly of performing sexual acts on Aaliyah, who would have been 13 or 14 years old.
With my testimony, it not only validated her situation, but it also gave them a timeline. I'm glad that I was able to speak up, not only for her, but for all of us.
His relationship with the singer was also at the center of his racketeering conviction. Prosecutors showing that Kelly bribed a state employee to create an identification card so he could marry her. A lawyer for Kelly today saying the prosecution ignored inconsistencies in the witnesses' stories.
Of course, Mr. Kelly is disappointed. He was not anticipating this verdict because, based on the evidence, why should he anticipate this verdict?
During the trial, Kelly's attorneys attacked the credibility of the witnesses, portraying them as groupies and jilted lovers from consensual relationships.
One of the tactics that the defense did in regards to R. Kelly is that R. Kelly is a huge celebrity. He doesn't need to force anyone to engage in a relationship with them. And they were suing him, and they had money to gain.
Kelly's defense took just 3 days, and only 4 witnesses testified. They ranged from an aspiring rapper to a former Chicago police officer to an audio engineer.
They didn't come off credible on the stand. It actually came off as he was desperate.
Kelly himself did not take the stand.
Tell us about the defense. They quoted MLK.
They began their defense argument with references to MLK. I never think that Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. should ever be mentioned in the same argument or discussion as that of R. Kelly. That is a disgrace.
Kelly, the self-proclaimed king of R&B, was once one of the biggest selling male artists and music producers. Hit songs like Ignition, making him the top R&B artist of the 1990s. This was not Kelly's first time in court.
Grammy-winning singer R. Kelly was acquitted on all charges of child pornography in a Chicago trial.
In 2008, Kelly was tried and acquitted on child pornography charges after the girl in that case refused to testify against him. In an interview with music journalist Toure, taped after his acquittal, R. Kelly struggles to answer what many viewed as a basic question.
Do you like teenage girls?
When you say teenage, how are we talking?
Girls who are teenagers.
I have some 19-year-old friends.
But Kelly's true fall from grace began in 2017 after a report by BuzzFeed included allegations of a sex cult run by the artist. Today's verdict may have never happened without the explosive 2019 Lifetime docuseries, Surviving R. Kelly, in which dozens of accusers spoke out about being abused by the singer.
It was consensual, but it was consented by intimidation.
I just wanted to know that it's not, you know, you're not alone. They're not alone.
And sharing stories of controlling behavior.
You had to pretty much agree to it, no matter how demeaning it felt.
Kelly defended himself in a 2019 explosive interview with CBS News.
Have you ever had sex with anyone under the age of 17?
No.
Never.
No. I didn't do this stuff. This is not me. I'm fighting for my life.
Kelly is also facing sex-related charges in Minnesota and Illinois. He has pleaded not guilty in both cases.
Well, this is not the end of what we're going to see of R. Kelly. R. Kelly is going to make his own tour through the country, through the courthouses.
He will be sentenced in May, and he deserves every day, every month, every year.
This is bigger than me. This is bigger than Aaliyah. This is for all victims that were affected and afflicted by this man, known and unknown.
Our thanks to Stephanie. Up next, the perilous climate signs, what Greenland tells us about the rest of the planet.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Is one of the most beautiful places on Earth. But scientists say Greenland, with its untouched vistas and ancient ice sheets, is the canary in the coal mine of climate change. Here's ABC's James Longman.
I'm walking along the very edge of our planet.
So we've made it up onto Greenland's ice sheet. Take a look. I mean, it's just incredible. It's a bit like kind of an ice desert.
Where just below my feet, a transformation is taking place. An important change gaining pace, which promises to turn all of our lives upside down. Nestled between the Arctic and the Atlantic Oceans, Greenland, which is normally a frozen wonderland, is, along with the rest of the Arctic, warming faster than anywhere else on Earth. The ice melt causing oceans to rise and making global climate systems more unpredictable.
The Arctic is the engine room of the climate system of Earth.
The situation is now even more dire. Last month, for the first time in recorded history, rain fell on Greenland's summit, raising alarm bells for climate scientists.
This is Greenland's ice sheet. It makes up something like 85% of the whole of Greenland. Where we're standing, the ice is something like 60 meters thick. In some places, it's as thick as 2 miles.
Watch your head.
Our destination, the Russell Glacier, one of the most studied places on the planet when it comes to climate change. These stunning turquoise melt lakes are harbinger of the retreating ice sheet. Marine scientist Carlos Duarte is my guide for this expedition.
Why is Greenland so important when it comes to understanding climate change, and why does it affect people at home?
Now, half of the rate of sea level rise comes from the melting of the Greenland ice sheet. And the Greenland ice sheet is on average about 1 kilometer thick of ice, and that is melting at very rapid rates. Just in 1 year, the amount of fresh water released by the Greenland ice sheet is enough to cover the whole of England with 2 meters of water.
Or Florida.
Or Florida with 2 meters of water, absolutely.
If Greenland continues to melt at this pace, scientists expect tens of millions of people around the world to face more frequent flooding and displacement by 2030. That's just 9 years from now. That's because the ice in the Arctic is crucial in regulating the temperatures of the world, reflecting more than 90% of the sun's heat back into the atmosphere. But when the ice turns to water and these blue lakes, that sun is absorbed rather than reflected, and that speeds up the melt.
Here we go, the research begins.
Critical research means getting up close to and spending extended time with the glacier. Scientists spend their days and nights on this often unwelcoming ice cap, taking the readings that inform us all.
So this is where we slept, right out here, right on the ice. I can tell you, it is cold, but what an experience, right? Sleeping on this ice, which is something like 30,000 years old. That's incredible.
Life here is rugged, to say the least. But some superstar adventurers are using Greenland's extreme topography to make a statement about climate change. Extreme E is an all-electric super truck race with an Earth-first mission statement, shining a light on environmental crises. From desert dunes to ocean beaches, Extreme E goes around the world on this specially kitted out ship to make tackling climate change cool. today, they're here in Greenland, racing to shine a light on the country's disappearing landscape.
You can see the Russell Glacier in the background.
Ali Russell is one of Extreme E's top executives.
And unfortunately, it's melting, and it's melting much quicker than any of us would like. And so what we've done is we've brought a major motorsport series to Greenland as a TV-only product to demonstrate what technology can do, what we can do with electric technology, and how we can inspire people to take action on climate change.
That's the key here. These engines, powered not by diesel or gas, but liquid hydrogen, a cutting-edge fuel that could change the way we all drive in the future.
So this is fueling the whole thing. This is where the energy comes
from.
Yes.
What's really interesting is hydrogen is 100% clean. And, you know, we've got green hydrogen. So we actually make our hydrogen on site using
solar panels.
So the energy from the Arctic sun is creating green hydrogen. And then we charge the cars using green hydrogen. And the only byproduct that we have from that is water, which we then use to wash the cars. So we have this circular sort of effect here.
American off-road champion Sarah Price usually drives monster trucks.
Right, here we go.
But now races across riverbeds and sand dunes in her souped-up electric car.
You come from the old world, such old gas guzzlers.
Yep.
Is this the new world?
Yeah, electrification is the future. That's what we're here doing. We're racers, and we're loving every little bit of the electric world that we're entering, and we've been involved with Extreme E. And even better, to give awareness to climate change and all these amazing things that we stand for racing this series.
The message here, that this place is not only worth protecting, but doing so is critical for all of us. And scientists around the world say it's not too late to change course. In fact, Professor Duarte is studying ways to reverse and stop global climate change. And he says the signs of it are all around us. The answer, he says, could be in the mud beneath the ice.
We're starting exploratory research to evaluate the potential of the sediment, the mud that is discharging from the ice sheet.
That mud, he hopes, is chemically unique and can trap carbon. His proposal, transfer massive amounts of this special mud into the ocean to keep it from releasing more climate-warming carbon into the atmosphere.
It's almost like the Earth is giving you the medicine it needs. You just have to go and find it.
You have to go and find it. What happens in the Arctic does not stay in the Arctic. It affects and cascades the whole of the world.
And finally tonight, New York's Metropolitan Opera has performed the works of composers from all over the world. But it has never presented that of a black composer until tonight. Terrence Blanchard's Fire Shut Up in My Bones, premiering this evening.
Nothing can stop me.
The composer saying the honor of being the first is bittersweet.
It's an overwhelming experience, but I gotta tell you, It's filled with mixed emotions because I know that I'm the first, but I know that I'm not the first qualified. And that always has to be said.
The history-making opera was the first performance in 18 months for the Met. The stage had been dark since the start of the pandemic. And that's Nightline for this evening. You can catch our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here, same time tomorrow. Thanks for the company, America. Good night.